Welcome to the Practice Brave podcast. I am the host, Brianna Battles, founder of Pregnancy and Postpartum Athleticism and CEO of Everyday Battles. I'm a career strength and conditioning coach, entrepreneur, mom of two wild little boys, and a lifelong athlete. I believe that athleticism does not end when motherhood begins, and this podcast is dedicated to coaching you by providing meaningful conversations, insights, and interview topics related to fitness, mindset, parenting, and of course, all the nuances of pregnancy and postpartum. From expert interviews to engaging conversations and reflections, this podcast is your trustworthy, relatable resource for learning how to practice brave through every season in your life. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Practice Brave podcast. Today I'm here with Bethany Robinson, and you might know her as Sporty Beth on Instagram, and she's here to talk to us about what her process has been like as somebody who works in the fitness industry and is now pregnant with her first baby. And I'm excited to share her perspective. So Beth, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
Absolutely. So give me some background on like who you are and just your work and your fitness background.
Well, so I've been doing CrossFit for the last 7 years. And I started out like, I was actually in a bigger body when I started out and I lost quite a lot of weight and then went into like competing in CrossFit quite a lot. And then I struggled with eating disorders all my life and struggled a lot with eating disorders when I started to compete more in CrossFit and focus more on like weight and getting lighter and stuff. And now I'm like in a bit of a recovery journey, recovering from that eating disorder. And I'm sort of out the other side in like a really like happy place now, but I am in a larger body. So there are certain challenges that come with that, still being within the CrossFit space. And then I'm also pregnant. I'm 6 months pregnant now. So that's been a whole new challenge, especially with like fitness, the eating disorder, mental health stuff, like all of it. It's one big challenge. And work-wise, I'm an online personal trainer. And I work with people, basically helping them get strong to do gymnastics a lot of the time. I do some like one-to-one coaching and then just bits and bobs. I'm mostly a content creator as well, but I was a teacher up until 2 years ago, quit my job to do this.
That's awesome. So I want you to talk to me about being in the CrossFit space and you lost a lot of weight, mm-hmm. eating, training, kind of building a platform in one body, so to speak. And then you did work and you got to know yourself more and understood that maybe what looked healthy on the outside wasn't actually serving you well on the inside. So can you talk to me about what that transition or recognition was like?
Yeah, sure. So initially when I started CrossFit, I was struggling with it really badly with my mental health and like part of dealing with my trauma has my eating disorder's bulimia. So that involves a binge eating component. So I was heavier than I am now, actually, when I started CrossFit and I wasn't doing any sort of sport. And I got really into CrossFit very fast and then very into the dieting side, of course, because I've got an eating disorder and I gravitate towards that kind of stuff. Lost over 100 pounds within the first year, not in the healthiest way. I mean, I was like calorie deficit, that kind of stuff, but it was really bad for me mentally. And I've only recently realized that every single time I've dieted, it's caused a relapse of my eating disorder. And I have had times where I've been okay and in a smaller body, but like mostly when I've engaged in dieting in any sort of way, I've ended up in a relapse.
You started CrossFit and you lost a lot of weight. Was that because you were like, I want to compete at CrossFit and I want to be leaner and stronger? Or was it just sort of like a byproduct of the environment and the training and whatnot?
It was partly a byproduct in that I went from not exercising to exercising, but mostly it was me putting myself into quite a heavy like calorie deficit, like probably 1,200 calories, really low. Especially I'm a tall person as well, so that's really, really low. I was dieting, I was chasing beauty standards. I wanted to look like one of the CrossFit Games athletes. I thought you needed to be lighter to do gymnastics. And I had this obsession with being under 70 kilos. 70 kilos is probably, I don't know what it is in pounds, but that sounds quite heavy. But for me, I'm like really thin at 70 kilos. In fact, I've never actually been 70 kilos in my adult life. I never made it there. So yeah, it was just an obsession with weight and aesthetics.
Yeah, absolutely. So then you, what was the turning point where you realized like that you were under fueling and just not healthy and happy on the inside, despite what maybe your outside appearance and athletic performance spoke?
Yeah. It's not so simple as like being one turning point, because I've had lots of ups and downs, and like there was red flags along the way, and it's whether I ignored them or actually listened to them. I had a few like health issues. Like I had really, really low blood pressure. I would faint if getting off the sofa, random things like that. I had like low sodium, heart palpitations, like chronic inflammation in my legs that just would never go down. Loads of stuff going on. And just lots of random health things. And also my heart rate used to be higher than it even is now, which is interesting. Bulimia can cause heart issues and loads of issues with your body. I had digestive system issues, obviously, because of the bulimia. Loads of stuff going wrong. And then at little points, I was like, oh, maybe I should like, maybe I should not do this. And I go through a little phase of like recovery, and then I gain a bit of weight, and I wouldn't be happy with having fat on my body, partly because of the way that CrossFit was at the time. I remember a particular CrossFit coach person, I won't mention his name, saying that female CrossFitters needed to be under 12% body fat. So I took that literally. And also the whole, you know, the whole fitness in 100 words, it says something about like not supporting body fat. I took that really literally. I was like, I need no body fat. So yeah, I'd relapse and I'd go and I'd diet again. And then that would lead to further, even more problematic eating disorder behaviors. And then I'd go through recovery and then I'd relapse and it would go along like that. And then I met my partner and he eats like a normal human being. And it started to make me realize how far off I was. He, like, one of the first meals I had with him, he included like mixed packs of vegetables, like the frozen ones. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't eat it. I was like, no, because I don't know how many calories are in that. I can't track that because I didn't know like how many bits of sweet corn were in it or how many bits of green beans, and it's vegetables. But I had like a massive freak out around it. And then I was like, oh shit. And he kind of started pointing out the things that were not necessarily normal and were a bit of an alarm bell. And then that was my turning point.
So kind of like a series of events. And then you met your partner and that like really just kind of opened your eyes, because now you're kind of intimately with somebody and they get to know who you really are, all of our good, all of our bad. And so that became that turning point for you.
Yeah. And because he was outside of the CrossFit space as well, he's into fitness. He's a hockey player. And he did like regular gym training, but didn't do CrossFit. So it like, if I had previous relationships or things going on before, and also like friends and stuff, they were all kind of within the CrossFit space. So unfortunately, some of the behaviors I was doing was so normal, obviously not the purging behaviors, but people didn't know about that. But the like drastically restricting calories or like macro tracking or just being like super dedicated to tracking every ounce of what I was eating was like normalized and celebrated. Yeah. So
it is so hard to not assume the behavior or the belief systems of the environment that you're like, there's of course like the CrossFit space, but in general, like any kind of fitness space, there's all so many different I don't know, just different groups and then different belief systems within the group about how you train, about how you eat, about how you live, about what your body looks like. And it is hard to not get like fully wrapped into that particular community, CrossFit or whatever it might be. And I see this rinse and repeated in every fitness community.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we need to be more awake to it. I think it needs to be spotted a bit more. And that's why I started talking more openly about it. I go through phases of talking openly about it and then not saying anything about it because I get a certain amount of backlash. And like this week, it's been Eating Disorder Awareness Week and I've made an effort to make a couple of posts and I've definitely got a fair amount of backlash.
Well, because I think people think eating disorder and automatically assume that it's a very frail person who is experiencing eating disorder, not somebody who has a lot of muscle or not somebody who has more fat on their body, but they think like frail, thin, like see.
They assume bones. Like anorexia is the one they always go to. And like most people, I don't know the statistics, but it's something like 6% of people with eating disorders are actually underweight and the rest are not. And especially bulimia, that's one where it doesn't necessarily correlate with being underweight.
So as you've shared online, and your body started to change from very fit and muscular presenting to being in a larger body, what was that transition like, sharing your fitness and then putting that online and then honestly being subjected to a lot of commentary, whether you ask for that or not?
Yeah, really, really hard. But equally, I'm like, I kind of, so the school that I worked in before is interesting because it's a behavioral school and I used to get quite a lot of verbal abuse. So I knew that I can take a certain amount of verbal abuse. And so partly I see it like that. And I'm like, I won't affect me as much as it would maybe other people, but it does still affect me, especially if I'm having like a bad day with some thoughts around like eating disorder stuff or just around my body image. But I try and pursue like body neutrality. I know that this is just a phase of my life right now, and this is what my body's doing. And of course, when I went into recovery, the purging stopped first and the binging stopped second. So I knew I was going to gain weight. I have no control over what amount of weight I gain or how my body is going to look. And all I really care about is those health metrics. And I get my health metrics tested by my doctor, and they have all massively improved since recovering from my eating disorder. So that's what matters to me. But I would lie if I felt like positive about my body, because I don't. That's why I'm in the sort of body neutrality space, because I feel like I should be allowed to train in the gym no matter what my body looks like. And I believe in myself as much as I would in a smaller body, because I can still do pretty cool things in the body that I'm in now. And like up until, I don't do pull-ups now because pregnancy, but I was doing like strict pull-ups, like, and I was like 110 kilos. So I quite like proving to people out there that it is possible to be in a larger body and to do stuff like strict pull-ups and some of the more complicated gymnastics movements, like butterfly pull-ups, I can do those, handstand push-ups, all of that. So yeah, it's like a double-edged sword. Like, I want to prove to other people that they can do it. I want to make people to believe in themselves. I want to show up and show that people that are plus size in a larger body can go to the gym, can do stuff like CrossFit, can wear whatever they want, whatever they feel comfortable in. But then I have to deal with the backlash.
Yeah. Well, and I love that. And, you know, in my work, I define an athlete as anybody pursuing fitness across a spectrum of interest or ability. And it's not being a size, or it's not a particular metric of performance. It's just like, how do we show up and participate in our form of fitness? And I do think that, you know, CrossFit is amazing because it is accessible to so many people, you know, and not everybody is going to be 12 or 15 or even 20% body fat. We see, but that's like really kind of the only bodies that we see glorified or shown doing a lot of different CrossFit-ish movements, especially on social media. And I think that just the reputation of CrossFit is for like very fit presenting people. But then it really ostracizes a lot of other people that are doing CrossFit in an ever-changing body, whether it's more fat, more muscle, pregnancy, aging, whatever it might be. Like, we're just not shown that side of it as much.
And it makes people think that you have to look like that in order to do it. And that's just like stopping so many people do the sport or get into exercise full stop, which is a real shame. And the thing is, even when I was competitive, like I was competing quite a lot up until I was about 90 kilos. And there's been certain points where I've had a fair amount of body fat and still absolutely crushed competitions, like podiumed events next to people that look like that people would assume would beat me, but they don't. And I've seen that with other friends that I compete with. And me and my sister, when we competed together, we were always like, we didn't look like we'd do well, but we always did well. And so I've always known that you can't actually tell someone's fitness level by looking at their body. And I'm surrounded by people in my life as well. Like, my stepmom is like the same size as me, and she's like European champion kayaker. There's loads of people that I know that are plus size and super sporty and super elite at their sports. So,
and I think anytime, like, you know, I played sports all through college, I coached in that setting. Yeah. And you see like athletes and you watch Olympians, like Olympians' bodies are so different across all these different sports, all these different abilities, all different ages. And like, we get, I think in the US especially, like, we are so conditioned to only thinking of fitness and sport in like one looking, like one kind of body or one form of fitness. But like you said, like, we see athleticism expressed in a lot of different ways when we are able to zoom out of just like the bubble that we're in. We know that people can be really fit and really strong in larger bodies. We just don't always see that showcased.
Yeah, 100%. And I've got a similar background too. Like, the reason my name is Sporty Bath is because I've been sporty all my life, apart from a brief blip where I did my degree and fell out of love with it. Mm-hmm. And that was due to because I wanted to be smaller, because I knew that if I continued to do sports, my body would not look like the people that I aspired to look like, which was at the time probably heroin chic, which is not good. Yeah. So it's funny, isn't it?
And from that era too.
Yeah. The media has a lot to do with it, I think, in the way that like brands represent athletes. If we keep hiring fitness models to represent brands and not actual athletes, then the problem's only going to continue. And I know literal Olympic athletes as well that have said to me, I don't feel like I look like an athlete. And it's like, you're an Olympian. Like, she's like a silver medalist. And it blows my mind.
Absolutely. I hear that all the time from a lot of the athletes that I work with too.
Yeah.
But then what has pregnancy been like for you? Because you obviously saw a shift in your body even prior to getting pregnant, and you had to like have some complicated feelings and commentary on your body changing even prior to adding the change of pregnancy. So what has this added change been like for you?
Yeah, it's been absolute chaos, I'm not gonna lie. I knew it was gonna be hard anyway, and I got myself into a space like mentally the best that I could before getting pregnant, because it was a planned pregnancy. And even up until like before getting pregnant, I was trying to reduce my stress, I was trying to reduce my sessions that I was doing, I was trying to make sure that I was actually recovered and that I was eating intuitively and then I could deal with the changes in hunger levels and all of that. So a lot of the stuff behind the scenes that nobody really knows about has been so that I could get pregnant. And not that I thought that I would have, well, to be fair, I'm 32. So I did have an inkling that I might have an issue, but it actually ended up only taking 2 months. So that happened way faster than we expected. But yeah. And then as soon as I got pregnant, I was hit with sickness. I was being sick 5 to 7 times a day. I couldn't keep any foods down. And I really like to eat super healthy. I love my vegetables and I love like just eating lots of stuff that makes my body feel good. And I couldn't eat barely any of, I couldn't eat vegetables. I would be sick as soon as I ate vegetables. The only kind of vegetables I could ingest were like tomato soup and beans, and that was it, on mashed potato. And that was awful for me and so triggering.
I was gonna say, was the being sick and throwing up from pregnancy, was that super triggering for your bulimia and eating disorder?
Yeah, so I would have, like, after I'd been sick, I'd have all these thoughts around whether I'd accidentally caused it to happen or any of that. And obviously I didn't, but it was just the shame and guilt that I would always feel if I like purged when I was sick with my eating disorder. It was still there just from being sick. Yeah. So that was really hard. And then sometimes I just got so sick of trying to eat, because every time I ate, I knew I'd be sick, that my brain would start sending in things like, oh, you could just stop eating. And I'm like, I'm constantly having to remind myself, like, no, I want my baby to grow, I need to eat food, and just trying to stick to a routine, making sure like fed is best, getting whatever food I can in no matter what that is. And then I had loads of shame around that because I was eating a lot of crumpets and there wasn't a lot of other food that I could eat, and I hate that. But thankfully now I'm in a new phase in my second trimester and I can eat vegetables again and fruit, and that's basically all I'm eating at the moment.
And so you're feeling a lot better now in terms of like what your intake is and your training, or is it still, what's it like being 6 months pregnant now?
Yeah, no, not better. It's different.
Yeah.
My sickness, I still have sickness now.
Okay.
And I had 3 weeks off and then it came back again. So, but now it's more like once every couple of days or once, like I had four times a day is probably the worst I've had it. Maybe once a day. It's not triggered by food anymore. It's just random. And then I can eat more things, so that's better. I'm not struggling to eat. Well, I am struggling to eat now because now I'm so full, I feel like I can barely eat any food, and I've got really bad like heartburn, so that's really hard. And I feel like my portion sizes have reduced significantly. And sometimes it's hard for me to eat enough during the day, but. And the training is different. Like the training during my first trimester, it was like, am I going to be sick between these sets? Do I need to run to the loo? Because I trained anyway. People tell me all the time, or maybe that was your body telling you to stop. And I'm like, no, I wasn't tired. Well, I was tired, but it's like my body wasn't telling me to stop. It was just my body didn't like the hormones and it was making me sick. I could still do the workout. I just had to run off to puke every so often. And then the second trimester, it's like I've got all of these different like aches or like just little things that make it harder. And like some days I feel really strong, some days I feel really weak. Some I'm struggling with like a near fainting thing at the moment where I have to lie on the floor if I feel like I'm going to pass out, which happens relatively frequently. So it's still a challenge.
Yeah, and I think people assume that after the first trimester that some of these feelings go away, and then that's not always true for people. And I think that it sounds like you found a nice happy medium of still trying to be able to fuel your body the ways that you can, even if it's not how you would necessarily prefer or what you were doing before, what you had expected, and getting in your training again, even if it's not in the capacity that you wish you could do. And I think like that shows such athletic maturity because there's a lot of people who have an all or nothing mentality. Well, I'm gonna like just ignore it and push through and just try to like keep maintaining what I've done, or they totally sideline themselves because they feel like, well, I can't, if I can't do it my way, I'm not gonna do it at all.
I feel like I can't take all the credit for that though, because I've got bipolar disorder as well, and exercise is one of the main things that keeps my mental health stable. And I literally can't stop exercising because if I do stop, I'll have a relapse with that. So it's almost not an option, and that serves as pretty decent motivation for me to not stop. So, because I get questions about motivation all the time, like how do you stay motivated to train, like even while you're like really tired all the time and puking? And it's like, I don't have motivation. I don't want to do it most of the time. I enjoy it when I'm there, but most of the time I don't want to. I do it because I have to, because if I relapse, then I have to be medicated. I don't like being medicated, so exercise it is.
This just goes to show like how multifaceted like the human experience is, and being pregnant, having so many different, I guess, variables that just like influence what the experience is. There is not a one size fits all approach or experience. And thanks for being open about that.
Thanks. Yeah, I think sometimes I'm too open about it, but I've got nothing to hide, really. Like, why not? And I th feel like there aren't a lot of people that talk about like openly having mental illnesses, so and the struggles that you have with that. So I feel like it's important to share. And even some people with just like depression or other mental health conditions are probably similar in that they need exercise. The one thing that I'm quite worried about is the postpartum period, because I'm high risk for postpartum psychosis because I've got bipolar disorder. So I may be looking at medication for that, which might mean that I have no emotions, which will not be fun if I'm trying to look after a baby. And then if I don't, it's like, well, like, how am I going to not exercise for 6 weeks? Like, that's hard. So I'd almost have to replace that with something that will be doable. Even if it's like I'll be able to walk upstairs, right? So maybe I could do a walking up the stairs workout.
Yeah, it's I think it's hard because with postpartum, and I'm like taking off my podcasting hat right now and going to train, but it's like you just don't know until you know. Like we can do all of the
Don't know
planning,
what birth's
like
gonna be
do this,
like.
maybe I could do that. But until like you know what your labor was like, your delivery was like, your own mood, your baby's temperament, like there's just so many changes that I think the best thing you can do is just like know thyself, right? Like you know what your predispositions are, you know what you need, and then try to implement pieces of support that you can. Reno medication might be an option. You know, therapy might be a good option. You know, like your partner being on the same page of you, of like what you need in order to like take care of you, to take care of your baby, and then to fit in pieces of helping your body recover, which will then help your brain continually recover as well. And it's just a tricky process to figure out when you're in the trenches.
And like, I'm really well supported as well. I'm kind of in a way lucky that I have a diagnosis, because I've been put on with, in the UK, we've got the perinatal mental health team, who are actually better than the actual mental health team. And she meets with me like every 3 weeks. And after baby's here, then she'll be coming in, like literally coming to my house like once a week, if not more, to check up on me. And she's got contact with the psychiatrist. She can refer me to different therapies. She's got all sorts going on, which is amazingly supported. And we're really lucky to have that, because our healthcare here is free as well. And it's just insane. Like, we're so privileged.
Yeah. So,
and then my partner's like, he's happy to take time off work if he needs to, because he's well aware that I might be unable to do anything for a couple of weeks if I do struggle with my mental health, and he'll just take over, and he's fine with doing that, which he's amazing though. So.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it sounds like from doing what you can, like controlling the variables that you can, you are putting yourself in a really great position to be supported postpartum, which that's the, I don't remember where I saw this survey, but it was like the number one thing that like a postpartum woman needs is support, like period, like whether it's with the baby or with her mental health or with her body, whatever it is, just like a variation of support and knowing that people care, so that she's not having to figure out what her resources are when, I mean, and you know, when you're depressed, it's really hard to like, I'm just going to advocate for myself and take all this initiative to set up these appointments or to do this or do that. Like, you know, you are shut down. You cannot do those things. So to be really like just aware of what your predispositions are is so key. During my second pregnancy, I was also really concerned about my mental health on the postpartum side. And so again, just like really good conversations about, here's the game plan with my husband of like what I was going to need and the support that we were going to implement postpartum to make sure that I had, you know, better resources than I did that first time around. And that alone made the biggest difference.
That's amazing. It's so good that you thought that through as well, and that you got those things in place. And I think maybe that's something that all pregnant people should think about, maybe in their first pregnancy, because postpartum depression is so common as well. And it, like, everybody's going to struggle. So I think it's something that we need to think about. But also, like, I am in a privileged position where I've got access to support, and I know not everybody has that. So
even just being like able to name it, because I think even if it's not, someone's like, well, I'm not like depressed, like you're still going through such a significant life transition. Plus your body has totally changed. Your hormones have changed. Your sleep has changed. All of these things have changed. So even if you're not like clinically depressed, you're still going to struggle. There's going to be mental struggle when you become a mom, even if you have the easiest baby, even if you're so endlessly thankful for this baby. Postpartum is just filled with different challenges at different times, and it can really test you when you're like not in your normal brain and normal body and normal routine and normal habits. All of those things are kind of triggers for our mental health anyway, and then they kind of get compounded postpartum. So I think if we can recognize that, then people won't feel so guilty or like, what's wrong with me? Like, I remember my sister saying to me, like, and she saw me through all of my stuff, and she was just like, at one of her low points and was like, what's wrong with me? And I'm like, nothing is wrong with you. Like, that's the problem, is like, it's just, it can just be that hard sometimes. And like, and it's so frustrating, because I think we only see one side of motherhood presented, especially in a health and fitness industry, where it's like, that girl's back at the gym, that girl doesn't look like she had a baby, or that she looks so happy. And we really kind of only see one side of health, fitness, and the motherhood experience.
Yeah, 100%. And I think as well, like depression does, I related to it when you said I don't feel depressed because my depression never featured the way I expected depression to feature. I go numb. I don't go sad often. Like the numbness is the first thing, and that can last for quite a long time. I just feel like nothingness. Like there's, I just don't like or want to do anything. I just feel completely numb emotionally. And like to recognize, that's why I put off it for so long getting any help with my mental health, because I was like, well, I'm not depressed. I'm not sad. I'm not like crying. I'm just, there's just nothing. Yeah. It's like an absence of feeling. And like, turns out that is depression. But yeah, I think a lot of people probably don't realize that that you need help at that point. Like,
yes.
And it's totally valid to get help. Like that's what it's there for.
Yeah. So, and there's no shame attached to it. And it's just something to be really aware of. And it's something that can be really well managed and can improve over time. So there is a lot of hope associated with this too. If you're listening to this episode and you're like, maybe experiencing different, like, again, the spectrum of depression is huge. So like wherever you're at on that spectrum, how you feel is really valid. And there's a lot of different resources for support. Definitely. So let's talk about some of the comments that you've received as somebody who shares a lot of content on social media. Yeah. And your body has been commented on for a long time. And your pregnant body has become even more commented on because, as I know very well, people love to tell pregnant people and mothers what they should and should not be doing.
Yes.
And assume expertise. And it's always a man with a private profile who's assuming.
It's always a man. Literally. 99.9% of my comments are from, like, no, my hate comments are from men anyway. Like, I only get the odd one from a woman. I don't really know what's wrong with them, why they feel like they need to lash out at women all the time. But, I mean, honestly, if you go into any, like, video of a woman doing something impressive, the comments just full of hate from men. I don't really get why. But... right. Yeah, so I've had a lot, and YouTube's probably the worst place I get them. And then they do come up on Instagram, I think, and TikTok can get pretty bad if I get a viral video, but it's all what you would expect. Like, they tell me that, oh, I'm going to lose the baby, I'm going to have a miscarriage, all of that sort of stuff. And there's the one I told you about earlier that someone said that my baby was going to come out with Parkinson's because I'm doing CrossFit, or like shaken baby syndrome. That's another one that I've had, that I'm going to crush the baby. And I think that was, I was just doing squats or something. Loads of stuff like that. And then because I'm in a larger body, like people telling me that I need to diet whilst pregnant, which is really bad advice, especially for somebody with an eating disorder. But they're literally telling me to lose weight whilst pregnant. And then loads of people like, why are you gaining weight? It's like, well, because I'm pregnant. But they'll literally comment that on posts about my pregnancy, which is just very confusing.
I know.
And then there's the really bad ones, like people just literally name calling me, like picking like larger bodied characters in Disney movies or Star Wars or whatever and calling me those names. Or just people like outright laughing at me. It's like, if you imagine high school bullies, it's like the kind of stuff that they'd come up with.
Right. I think the bullying is, it's wild that this exists among like grown ass adults. And yet here we are, when you sit behind a keyboard, or a computer screen, phone screen, it's just so easy for these people to spew comments. And people that have actual expertise and whose opinions actually matter are never the ones in the comment sections. Like, that's so important for, I think, consumers to know, is like, when you're looking at these comments, those are not the people. It's very rare for the people who are actually experts, who are well-informed, to be engaging a lot in the comment sections.
Yeah. And also, like, I think it's because the experts know that they should not be openly commenting on somebody's journey, like, especially within the eating disorder space. Like, you're not supposed to comment on somebody's diet unless you are that person's dietitian and specifically qualified in eating disorders. So, but all these gym bros with like basic nutrition advice think that they know exactly how to cure an eating disorder. So,
right. And I think it's interesting because we see a lot of that, like, fear mongering, like you're going to hurt the baby or this or that, where it's like a lot of fear, or like basically you should just be like at home doing nothing because you're so fragile when you're pregnant. Or the other end, which I actually see a lot from women too, is like, well, I did it all through my pregnancy. My doctor told me that this was fine. So therefore, blanket statement, it's okay for you too. And it's like,
I've had a bit of that.
Like
too.
Your one individual experience certainly does not dictate recommendations for the majority at all. Yeah. And yet, like, that's what we see is like that glorification culture or that justification that they want to say their medical doctor, who is not trained in pregnancy and postpartum fitness, has this, like, is this expert opinion on those specifics. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah. Well, I've had a few people saying like, oh, well, Tia did it, so you should be able to. Yeah. And it's like, no, like, that's not how it works. And I've scaled back a lot of stuff way more than I ever expected to. And a lot of those things happened within the first trimester. And I was like, after seeing Tia during her pregnancy, I was like, I'm going to be exactly like that. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to be doing handstand push-ups late into my pregnancy. And then obviously they went out the window straight away because they would make me sick if anything.
Right. And it's like, sure, there's going to be exceptions, but like, I get to work with a lot of these high level athletes, and like behind the scenes, like, people don't actually know what they're experiencing, what their bodies have been through, their reasons for continuing to train like this or to compete here or do that. Like, there's just so much that the general public does not know about what these different athletes are experiencing or have experienced. And we cannot compare or use what one person shares as a guiding light for the rest of the population to like train like so-and-so did, or if she was doing that at X amount of weeks pregnant or X amount of weeks postpartum, then that's right for me too. And something I say a lot, which is tends to help, is like, if you train like you're not the exception, you might actually become it, but like, it's not really worth it to test some of those boundaries during a season where your body, your life, your training, your capacity, everything is changing or has been significantly changed from the inside out.
Mm, exactly. And like, for me, like, I'm not really a competitive athlete anymore. I do the odd competition if I want to. And like, one of my first goals coming back is probably going to be like a Hyrox or something that's a bit, not CrossFit, but just like fun.
Yeah.
And like, it's not my priority to be super fit. I don't even care if I get loads weaker. I don't care about losing all of my gymnastics. All I want to do is put my body in the best position to recover. And that's the main thing that matters to me. So I really couldn't care less if I drop most of the movements. But again, I think people, like, to your point, people can probably see my page and think, oh, I could do that during pregnancy. Or they won't think about all, they don't know the things that I'm going through or the things that I'm battling. And like, they don't know that I had to stop a workout the other day because I felt like I was going to faint and I had to literally quit halfway through, or that I had to scale down the weights today because I felt really weak. They don't know any of that. They just see the weights on the bar.
You're truly seeing all of our highlight reels. And it's just funny.
Even those that try not to make it a highlight reel.
Like, I mean, that's just the nature of sharing on social media. Like, that's just part of it. You do it. I do it. We all do it. But I think as like consumers, anyone listening to this, like, you, I promise you, I work with all of these athletes across so many different sports, high level athletes with very important performance goals. And you have no idea what they have experienced, what their bodies need, or what they're having to do in order to basically have a highlight reel or to compete or do all these things. There is a variety of different sacrifices, and not just like the normal sacrifices of like time or whatever that we typically think. So just like I say, it's just so important to stay in your own lane, focus on what your body needs, and do not compare it to what you see on social media or what others do. Like, there's just so much more to it than what we're shown.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, it's really hard to, even when I try and show like the real stuff as well, it's like, somehow it just misses the mark. Like, somehow people are still like, oh, you're doing amazing. And it's like, no, like, this is a really bad day.
No.
But I guess it's me, like, it's in comparison to my previous performance and like in comparison to the weights I'm used to lifting and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's all relative to the individual. Some things have really weirded me out though. Like, my cardio is fine at the moment. Like, I was holding like a 142 pace on the C2 bike the other day with ease. And I was like, that's like an 8 out of 10. I was like RPE 8, 7, 8 is trying what I stay around. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how am I doing this 6 months pregnant? Like,
yeah. But Well, I think our VO2 max changes, and you know, it's really cool that what our body can do. And again, everybody is different. Where others, like I was talking to my neighbor, she's pregnant, and she's like, I can't even go on a walk through the neighborhood. Like, I am so exhausted. And she's like, there's a great level of fitness, but she's just like probably also maybe like 5-ish months pregnant, and she's just totally exhausted. So again, it's like, it is such a different experience. And so we can like, kind of, we have basic guidelines, but then there's a lot of tweaking to fit the individual. And that's the nature of this game.
There's something about walking as well. Like, walks are hard for me at the moment, and I live on a hill, so I struggle to walk up the hill to get to the top to walk my dog. Uh-huh. And like, it's different, but walking for me at the moment is harder than doing a CrossFit workout, which doesn't make much sense, but I guess it must be to do with like moving my body in space, like along a road rather than standing in one spot or sitting on a bike.
Yeah. Or even like just like the load sometimes, like on the pelvic floor, like lower abdomen, if there's any kind of sensitivity or anything like that, like sometimes that can contribute to it too, where you're just like, I'm not really comfortable walking for long anymore because my gait has changed, my body has changed, things like that.
Oh yeah, I've got the pregnancy waddle for sure. But then I was struggling a lot with breathlessness as well. So there's like, it's lots of little things.
Yeah. So it just doesn't always make sense, does it? But our bodies are pretty incredible in that they adapt and they do what they need to do. And, you know, we also try to help control that process through our choices and how we adjust our training.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely feel a lot better, I think. Like, I had a week off exercising. I really noticed the difference after I had that week off. So it's definitely something that I want to continue for as long as I can in my pregnancy too, because I think it's really helping. I don't have a lot of the like pelvic pain or other stuff. I've got the round ligament pain a little bit, but I find I can stretch and it feels a little bit better. But so far, I'm not struggling with too many issues. Which is good. Other than the ones I've already stated.
Yeah, I'm so happy for you. And I can't wait. Hopefully we can have a conversation when you're postpartum just to check in and see
how
things are going. Cool. And I love that you've been sharing your process, because I think that there's so many people that, you know, identify a lot with you, whether it's what you look like or it's what you say, it's how you say it, all of those things. And I remember like, I think recently you had a post talking about being in a larger body and then being a like pregnant in a larger body, but like still fit. And we don't see a lot of like fit, bigger bodied pregnant people, right? Really, like something pregnant. Like that, right?
And I thought that like plus size really pregnant women, you just don't see anywhere. And that was something that I really noticed going into pregnancy. I was like, oh my God, I don't know what my body's gonna look like. All I see is these skinny women with like basketball,
like the belly only pregnancy or whatever.
Yeah. You don't see bodies like mine. So that's when I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should share some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I'm sure how many people resonated with it as well.
I think it's incredibly important to like just keep sharing that, because there are so many people that get pregnant that are in a lot of different body sizes. And it's so important to show that you can still participate in fitness no matter what you look like, no matter like, if even if you're pregnant, like even if you're a mom, we can still train even if our body looks different than it used to. Or that we wish it would, like, how can we embrace and train in the body that we're currently in? And I love that you are showcasing what that looks like for you.
Yeah, thanks. I feel like sometimes I'm just posting to avoid and nobody actually sees it, but that's mainly because I have quite good boundaries with my phone. But I'm happy to hear that it's helping some people.
I think so. It's good to have that kind of representation out there. And working with a lot of different pregnant athletes, I'm just appreciative that you are one of them and putting it out there and just doing a really good job of supporting other people who, if they're not already in this season, they will be. It's just this population of, you know, pregnant and postpartum athletes that are really kind of trying to keep pursuing fitness into motherhood. Like, this is, we're still in the very beginning of that. It's not even a trend. Like, it's just the very beginning seasons of really making this the norm. Like, my mom didn't start training until she was in her 50s, you know? Like, it's not like I grew up with that. And most of us didn't grow up with moms that were maybe like as involved. Like, CrossFit wasn't a thing then. And I think we're just going to keep seeing this population grow more and more. So thank you for being part of that wave.
Definitely. Oh, thank you. Thank you for doing that as well. Like, what you do really matters. And I think we can tell by the comments, like, how important it is that we do this and share it because, yeah, the backlash is still
We're
there.
trying. We're fighting the good fight and just trying to get more coaches out there to like really get it so that, you know, athletes like you are supported in their gym and their community, and then just different athletes having resources so that they know how to help themselves through these chapters if maybe their coaches don't know. So where can people find, follow you and just learn more from you?
Oh, I'm Sporty Beth on basically all platforms, so Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And that's it, I think. Got a
Perfect.
program as well. They're all linked to my bio. Everything's just linked. Thank
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time and your experiences. We appreciate you, and hopefully we can chat again when you are on the other side.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Practice Brave podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review and help us spread the work we are doing to improve the overall information and messaging in the fitness industry and beyond. Now, if you are pregnant and you are looking for a trustworthy exercise program to follow, I have you covered. The Pregnant Athlete Training Program is a well-rounded program for pregnancy with workouts for each week that are appropriate for your changing body. That's 36 weeks of workouts, 3 to 4 workouts each week, and tons of guidance on exercise strategy. We also have an at-home version of that program. If you are postpartum and you're looking for an exercise program to follow, the 8-week postpartum athlete training program would be a really great way to help bridge the gap between rehab and the fitness you actually want to do. From there, we have the Practice Brave Fitness Program, which is an ongoing strength and conditioning program where you get new workouts each week and have a lot of guidance from myself and my co-coach, Heather Osby. This is the only way that I'm really offering ongoing coaching at this point in time. If you have ever considered becoming a certified pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach, I would love to have you join us. Pregnancy and Postpartum Athleticism is a self-paced online certification course that will uplevel your coaching skills and help connect the dots between pelvic health and long-term athletic performance, especially during pregnancy and postpartum. Become who you needed and become who your online and local community needs by becoming a certified pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach. Thank you again for listening to the Practice Brave podcast. I appreciate you. And please help me continue spreading this messaging, this information, and this work.